hello, and welcome to The Grand Cast, Season 2, Episode 8. Today is Sunday, May the 21st, 2017, according to the, I think it's Gregorian calendar.
I have read. Yeah.
My guest this evening, Mr. Sean Francis. I think that was a car squealing.
It's just barely evening, and people are on their way home to try and catch the Twin Peaks premiere, I think.
Oh, that is tonight?
That is tonight.
I didn't watch the first...
two seasons?
No, the original.
So the only two seasons that exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like science fiction, fantasy, kind of?
Oh, man, Chris, we could spend an entire hour just on that alone.
Oh, okay. Enlighten me. Just
just a nutshell elevator pitch. It's a murder mystery set in a small town in Washington during the early 90s.
Washington State.
Yes. It's somewhere in the Seattle Pacific Northwest region. They never quite explicitly state where it is, but it's near the Canadian border, and a high school girl is found, her body is found wrapped in plastic, washed up on the shore by the sawmill of a small town, and everyone is greatly affected by this event, and a FBI agent is brought in to investigate in the murder, and quickly reveals a seedy underbelly of this seemingly innocent small town and the darkness and somewhat supernatural elements surrounding it. So, yeah, it's pretty great.
I will be watching that premiere.
Yeah, David Lynch is the co-creator, and he's directing all of the new season himself. He directed like probably a handful, maybe half a dozen episodes of the original series, and those are, in my opinion, the best episodes. This has already gone off the rails and completely
no
long-winded.
That was great. There's a David Lynch movie at the UICA right now.
Yeah, I saw it.
How was it?
It was great. It's all about him and his visual art. Yeah, I saw it with a couple friends, our good friend Kimmy Snyder, and Dustin Eaton, who I don't know if you have met, but anyway. Nope. But yeah, the three of us went and saw it. It was great.
Nice. I'll try to check that out before it leaves the theater.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I won't distract you any further. Go on with what you had planned.
That was actually the first bullet point after I introduced the episode.
Sean, let's talk about Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and then right after that, the mission statement for the show, which is the purpose of the Grand Cast, is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And then the goals, two goals. Goal number one, to post one new episode weekly. I have one with the Tom and Erica.
Mm.
Might be out tonight. Might be watching Twin Peaks, and it'll be out Tuesday, maybe?
One of the two. Tom and Erica, we'll see how you scale.
Or Wednesday? I don't know.
You're right.
Sometime.
Who can say?
Nobody knows but Jesus. He's my production manager.
Are you...
Jesus?
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, are you pronouncing it? Okay. He doesn't seem... He never corrects you?
I assumed your ethnicity... so I adapted the pronunciation based on that. But I don't know. Maybe are you of Latin descent? Is that even the right term? Should probably change the topic. The second goal, to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content.
I know we've already made at least one Uber Twin Peaks fan super happy, whoever that person might be.
Maybe it's
Or maybe Sean we've Francis. Angered them greatly.
Oh,
by completely butchering.
Yeah. if you're out there, passionate Twins Peak, Twins Peak,
Twin Peaks. Oh man, that's just gonna incite them even more, Chris.
Yeah, you can hashtag Twins Peak Grandcasts.
Hashtag Twins Peak.
There's a lot less competition on that hashtag.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Get trending more easily. I don't know how trending works.
I feel like it would be the opposite. I feel like that would be the only, if there's only one person and they're misspelling it, it's going to have a lot less traction than everybody else who's using the correct spelling.
Maybe a higher engagement rate, though. It's not lost in the sea of Twin Peaks.
That's true. You know, you've got me there.
It's like the domain squatters who get like Yahoo with three O's.
Oh, sure. Yeah. People who like big just money. Are waiting.
Yeah.
Biding their time.
I need to get twinspeak.com. Well, it's probably already taken now.
You never know.
I shouldn't have said it out loud.
Ugh. We can edit this out, right? Jesus will take care of this for us?
Yes.
Okay.
Can edit mint in it instead.
Mint.
It's the word mint on top of where I would say twinspeak.com.
Right.
Getting into the interview portion.
Yes.
What is your favorite color?
My favorite color is it kind of varies, but just judging off of the bulk of my wardrobe, it's some shade of blue, usually a dark navy or somewhere, like a combination of blues. I used to go for a more loud and brash color scheme when I was in middle school or early high school to try and make a point about myself, whatever that might be. But I've kind of mellowed out and gone with more neutral. And right now I'm wearing like a flannel red plaid kind of shirt. So it varies.
Is that a black or like a midnight blue?
I think it's black. Yeah, it's definitely in no way, shape, or form the color that I ultimately stated as my favorite. So yeah, blue.
Nice. I'm a fan of the blues.
Sure.
The color palette.
Yeah.
As well as the musical style.
And the clues.
And, well, didn't that guy end up being a weirdo?
No.
No? Oh, was that someone else?
I could talk about Steve from Blue's Clues just as much as I could about Twin Peaks.
Oh.
He released an album with the Flaming Lips.
Really?
Yeah. He recorded an album called Songs for Dust Mites. I think this was a topic on an earlier Grandcast. I think someone mentioned, and I, in my car, was like, oh, man, I can't wait to talk about this.
Oh.
And now it's happening.
It's happening.
Yeah. No, he quit the show and decided to become, like, a weird, like, not a weirdo in the sense of, like, he did
like a Pee-wee unsavory Herbie
things. No. Well, oh, man. You're hitting all my buttons, Chris.
Paul Rubens fan?
I love Paul Rubens. I love Pee-wee Herman. Steve Burns from Blue's Clues, he recorded an album called Songs for Dust Mites with the Flaming Lips. And he has another one that he just released fairly recently that's more of like a kids or all ages sort of album. But it's great. And if you like that band, you'll probably like his stuff as well.
Huh. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
He made all that. Was that Nickelodeon? All that Nickelodeon money?
And oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's coasting on that.
He can do whatever he wants.
On that orange cash. So, yeah.
Pee-wee Herman?
Pee-wee Herman. We can talk about that. I was born in the late 80s, and I remember watching Pee-wee's Playhouse like when it was still on the air.
Oh, yeah.
And when that scandal broke out, I didn't know what to make of it because I was too young. But all I knew is that my one of my favorite shows was no longer on the air, and I didn't know what happened to him, and my parents didn't really ever explain it. I have it's a pretty weird and incredible story, a Playhouse play set as a toy that I got as a gift, and it's the Playhouse and has all the different parts, and it's not supposed to come with any other figures. It's just a playset. But someone apparently had shoved a bunch of the other figures that you could get in this box, and like at the Toys R Us, like they were staging it to like come back and steal it.
Oh.
And my parents' friend who bought it and to give it to me as a gift just happened to grab this one that was already pre-stuffed with a bunch of toys and didn't know it. And then when we opened it up, it was just like, had everything, had Cherry, had Pee-wee himself, had the magic screen and all that. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's a fond memory of mine.
Full setup.
Yeah. It was a great setup. But yeah. So no, I love that show. I went back and watched the movie when I got older, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Big Top Pee-wee. And then I went, when I got a little bit older, I watched the original show that he did at in LA for the Groundlings, that the movie and show was eventually based on. It was definitely much more like adult oriented, and Phil Hartman's in it. Phil Hartman co-wrote Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and he plays the captain. What was his name? He's like a sea captain. I can't remember his name, but yeah, anyway. So yeah, as a burgeoning comedy fan, I was like, oh man, Pee-wee has more street cred than I remembered.
What'd you think of the new movie?
I love the new movie. I thought it was great. A friend of mine and I, who are big fans of the original film, we actually had a viewing party, and we made eyes to put on the chairs so that it looked like the chair, and like we painted like the versions of the puppets and hung them and turned the apartment into a playhouse, and we had like candy flavored like libations, and yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was definitely like there are parts of it that are like, I think, on par with bits from the original movie, and overall, you know, he's obviously not as young as he was, but I didn't care. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I hope he does more with that character. I've been like following that for years now. He's been trying to like bring that character back, and he's like hinted at like possible movie ideas where it's like he goes to jail, which,
oh boy,
seems like probably
so kind of in the earnest direction.
Maybe, yeah, more in like kind of a dark comedy sort of direction, but or like, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I think he's super, super talented and funny.
Did you see Mystery Men?
Oh yeah, no, and that was a big deal because that was like the first big, like he kind of went in a little bit of hiding for a while after that unfortunate scandal, and that was like his first like major film role in a while, and so when I saw that in theaters, I was like very excited.
Underrated movie.
Underrated it for sure. There's a lot of great quotes that I still will pepper in daily. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
William H. Macy is,
he does, yeah,
the shoveler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great cast.
Hank Azaria.
Hank Azaria is in that. Greg Kinnear is great in that. Janine and Bill, Ben. Eddie Izzard, the leader of the disco gang. Jeffrey Rush is the...
Janine Garofalo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep, so great. Yeah. Pre-fame Dane Cook. He's the Waffle Man, I think, briefly, in the audition sequence.
It's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah.
I guess I missed Dane Cook.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I missed him.
Oh, whoa. Yeah.
Is it still cool to be mean about Dane Cook?
You know, I don't know. I'm still mostly just not a fan, but I've kind of tempered my seething hatred of him, I guess.
Down to ambivalence.
Yeah. I heard he's, I don't know, chilled out a little bit, maybe. He was on an episode of Louis that was really good. He did a really good job in that and kind of addressed the whole thing.
Stealing material.
Yeah, exactly. He did it in a tongue-in-cheek way that kind of, you know, probably bought him some, you know.
Yeah.
Well wishes.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Oh, man. Besides Pee Wee Herman, I don't know. Like, I grew up, like, my parents were a little older than some other parents, so they had a little tastes that skewed, like, to more, like, classic television kind of stuff. But I, like, kind of grew up watching a lot of Muppet Show was big. But then all the guests from like the 70s, like all those like comedians that were on the show, my parents would like explain who they were, like, because they actually could, like, oh yeah, that's Zero Mostel, or that's, you know, Peter Sellers or whoever it might be. And so I'd get to, you know, from a young age, learned how to like figure out what they were referencing and then like go and seek it out to find the original. Like Animaniacs was another show like that. So I don't know, from a young age, they just encouraged me to like not just take things at face value, but to be like, why is that funny? What does that reference? Well, figure it out and find it for yourself, and now you know why it's funny. So
the different levels of comedy,
exactly, all
the references, and
mm-hmm,
homages.
Mm-hmm.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
Part of, to kind of go along with that, like, just like I was kind of encouraged to kind of pursue a lot of like different creative like pursuits as a kid. So theater was one of those, and so I did a lot of community theater when I was young, and then got into high school, and there weren't as many opportunities because we didn't like have a huge theater program at my school, but there was always like improv was part of, like, you know, they'd have like little improv games during practices, or so like performing comedy, you know, I always knew that was something that I kind of enjoyed doing, just from like doing shows and acting goofy. I was definitely a class clown in a lot of ways, so it was just finding the right outlet as opposed to interrupting class to do it.
Huh. Please tell me about your relationship with karaoke.
Oh boy, Chris, again, this would be a whole like a 2-hour episode. You know, I honestly didn't really start doing karaoke earnestly until like pretty late in life. I was already like 21, or I was like definitely 22 or so. Like I didn't do it a bunch. I did a few times like at cast parties in like middle school or high school, but only like once or twice. Like the actual, like there's a screen and you're singing, but I would sing all the time. Like I'm a big music nerd, and like a lot of people can probably attest to the fact that I'll just like randomly just start humming or singing a song if it just pops into my head. So like that was from a very young age, I would do that. So I was always like just constantly quoting things or singing songs. So when I found out that there was a thing that existed where that was encouraged, it was like the doors blew open. And so I just, my friends who I would go do karaoke with, one of them lived in a house behind Shots in Standale. And they had karaoke 3 nights a week. And there was a summer where basically all three of those nights, every night there was karaoke, we were there doing karaoke. And so I just, you know, kind of built up a repertoire of songs, because if you're doing it that much, you don't want to just do the same two or three songs over and over again. So like early on, I just kind of like decided like I would have like a couple standbys, but I would try to do something different every single time. Nice. And eventually that morphed into what I typically do now, which is what I'm sure sparked this question. But I just started doing mashups at karaoke, mostly inspired by this guy, Neil Cicerega, who does these album-long mashups of, like, they're called Mouth Sounds is the trilogy, and they're all like a bunch of Smash Mouth mashups. It's like six different versions of All Star with other songs. And so I just started doing those because I thought it was hilarious, and I've always been a mashup fan too. Like, that was another thing I nerded out early on. And so I was like, okay, so I can sing into a microphone any song I want. I can troll people by starting one song and then singing a completely different song on top of it, and then there's just a whole like third element of just like the performance of like taking it way too seriously even though it's completely ridiculous. So yeah, I don't know, it was just a super fun, it's a party trick, you know, it's essentially It's a one gag fun thing, but it's fun.
Yeah. I've enjoyed listening.
You're one of the few.
Zach Sherporn sent me it was a mashup album. I think it was called like 1 week or something.
Oh yeah.
Where every song,
yep,
it started out as the song and then they just played 1 week
different, or yeah, it's just the vocals of 1 week on top of other songs. Yeah, no, I've heard that. I've heard people, there's like a whole, man, there's a whole segment of the internet devoted to like ridiculous meme mashups like that. But I don't know, Neil Cicerega, I'm just shouting him out because I can't, like, I don't want people, Cameron, I'm gonna throw this out there, Cameron at one point was like, you know, I've heard that before. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not like claiming I came up with it. It's a thing that exists on the internet. I assume other people have heard of it. Sorry, Cam. I love you, but
fuck you, Cam.
No, don't say that.
Sorry. Love you, Cam. Let's talk about Jelly Bean Station. And generally puppet comedy.
Well, to tag into that, so Cameron and I have a big shared fandom of Comedy Bang Bang, and we were talking, trying to figure out a way to do something like that at Com, something that had like a format, sort of interview format, but had like characters that you could improvise and come up with every episode. And we got Aaron involved early on in that discussion, and we figured like we didn't want to copy the format of Comedy Bang Bang. We just liked the idea of like it, of like just an interview show with characters. But somehow we stumbled upon the idea of making it a kid's show. And as once that happened, it's like, oh, well, that's perfect. And the name was, I'll take credit for the name until someone decides they don't want to, but I'm pretty sure it's vaguely inspired by a sketch group that I was in high school that my friend TJ started called Sunny Street Snow Cones. And so I think I subconsciously like inverted that with like the candy like theme into Jelly Bean Station. But yeah, it's like, you know, a ridiculous kind of homage to, you know, Pee Wee Herman too, Pee Wee's Playhouse and like the Shining Time Station with Thomas the Tank Engine and all those like Sesame Street, all those kid shows that I loved growing up, Muppets in general. And we kind of turned it into this like, you know, warped, like demented adult version of that. Yeah, I have puppets from when I was in a church ministry puppet group, which is something that I'm simultaneously a little embarrassed to admit, but also at the same time, like, it's, if I hadn't done that, Jelly Bean Station wouldn't exist. So, I mean, can't really knock it. No, my friend Jason and I, that was like a thing that our church did. And we started doing it around the same time. And that's how he and I kind of bonded and became good friends and decided that we wanted to, you know, do more like creative things like that. And we decided, you know, we wanted to pursue like a film degree. And we stuck it out and did, like, most kids in the church would do it for like 2 years and then they would just start going to the regular youth group. It was like a kind of like an in-between for fifth and sixth graders who were like too old for Sunday school but not old enough for like Sunday night youth group. So but he and I did it like all through high school basically, just because it was just weird enough to us, and it was like we knew that it was ridiculous, but we're already in it. Let's just take this as far as we can go. And we would go to conventions, like Christian puppetry conventions.
That's
like
a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah, there's like a whole like world of that.
Are there documentaries about it?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are. There's this main company called One Way Street, and it's like the Christian version of Sesame Street, essentially.
Huh.
And they host these conventions, and we would travel like to go to Grand Rapids, and one year we went to Indiana one year. It was like wherever it was the closest place, and there were competitions. You would compete, like you would perform like a song or a sketch. And they were all obviously religious themed. And there were workshops where you get learned how to do puppetry like correctly and try and like all these different elements, like making props and making puppets. And it was ridiculous. And we had like a weird love-hate, like we loved the idea of it, but we also knew how ridiculous it seemed to everyone else. And I feel like it's justified now because I have puppet versions of all the members of Late Night minus like a couple members. Like there's no like true, I don't have any female puppets, so unfortunately the female cast members of Late Night are not well represented yet, but maybe that will change.
Hopefully. That segues nicely into let's talk about Late Night Grand Rapids.
Sure. I met Alistair Watt doing a 24-hour theater show at Dog Story as part of the Lake Fringe Effect Festival. I think I said that wrong. No, Lake Effect Fringe Festival. And it was a yeah, 24-hour festival, theater festival, where they had people sign up to write plays and direct and act, and the writers got a topic. They had 12 hours to write it, and then they assigned the script to a director and some actors based on the needs of that script. And then I wound up directing it, because they were like, well, we're good on actors. We don't need any more, but we need directors. So I directed Al and Laura Yzarsky, and John Miller was the other actor in this script. And it was written by Chris Vander Ark, who's well known in the community as a playwright. And I don't know exactly how. I think they matched us together based off of like a survey that we filled out, but it was like, I just wrote down that I like comedy and slapstick and stuff. So Chris wrote this straight out of like a sitcom of like, like a Laura's on a date with a guy from she met on Tinder. And then the second guy shows up, who's delivering the food, the Chinese food that they ordered, and he's someone else that she has a date with like the next night or something that she matched with on Tinder. And so he's like, oh, well, I got nothing else going on. This is the last delivery of my shift. So you want to just hang out now? And so it turns into her going like hosting two different dates at the same time in her apartment, and neither of them know like about the other. And it like at one point, like she, yeah, it's like total farce, like slamming doors. And at one point she convinces the other, each other, that the other person is her brother or something like that. And, yeah. Anyway, ridiculous thing. Anyway, so I met Al doing that, and I had known of him through some friends, but that was my first time actually meeting him and working with him. And then I found out Audrey Stein worked with him at Outback at the time, Outback Steakhouse. And she was like, yeah, Alistair is looking at creating this sketch group, and I think you guys would be good. And so it was her and I and Al, and we asked Laura to join. And I knew KJ from working with him at Best Buy. And I knew he did stand-up, and I'd seen him do stand-up, and I thought it was really funny, so I asked him to join. And then my friend Danielle from Grand Valley, we did theater together. And so that was like the base six. Sarah Winger was also involved early on. I knew that she was a big comedy fan, and then she had to take a break because of her job as a nurse is like extremely demanding. So, but she came back and now is a full-fledged member. Peter White was also a member early on, and he was another Grand Valley film guy. And AJ Rank was also involved, and he's a stand-up that Al knew and was a super funny guy. And he was mostly a writer, but he did perform in some sketches later on. And so that was like the core group, and then people have moved and come and gone, and Stevie Sohutsky is now a member, but it's been kind of in general like a core group of like five or six people, and the format is just like we wanted to do a live, like Saturday Night Live type show in Grand Rapids, and we didn't really know if there'd be an audience for it at first. It was something that I, you know, had been looking for, like something exactly like that, but didn't know how to make it happen. And Al had the vision and the drive to make it happen. And we threw together a bunch of people and we just did a show and to see how it would go. And it worked. It went really well, and we lucked out because the same, like, you know, the same month we had a show, our first show scheduled, was the beginning of what is now Comedy Outlet Mondays. And so we kind of lucked out in that this scene kind of kickstarted at the same time. And so it became a nice mutual relationship and friendship with all those people. But yeah, that was super long-winded explanation, but...
Oh, that's great. Thank you. I've really been enjoying the That's My Sitcom.
Yeah, no, that's another thing that... So Alistair's great. He just is... He has more ideas per day than anyone that I can ever like imagine attempting. And he just will like, what if we did this? And we'll be like, maybe. And then we try it and it works. And so then we just roll with it. So that was an idea that he had had of wanting to do like some sort of like long form improv thing, and the crux of it being it's a sitcom and we'll make fun of, you know, sitcom tropes and have a laugh track. And the fact that it's like continuous and like everything that happens winds up being canonical is kind of an interesting fun challenge, because it's like, all right, well, Al wants to do this bit where he has a twin that turns out to actually just be him in disguise. All right, well, that's what it is now for the rest of for every episode after that. That's the reality of this world. So that's been fun to do and to play around with the different types of sitcoms. We've done the bar Cheers type of sitcom with Friendly's Pub. We've done the Office type sitcom with Josh's workplace. We've done the high school sitcom with Tower of London High. We've had another one tomorrow, and it's a secret what it will wind up being, but it'll be a new genre attempt. So that'd be fun.
Medical?
And that's huh?
Medical?
Not medical. That might be something down the road. No. But yeah, no, it's been fun to do that too, because it allows us to collaborate with more outside people like Josh or Angelica and Zach have helped out, and Tom did some, and doing like the commercial breaks. So like we've had people like guest and doing those commercial breaks has been fun. So it's just a fun way to get ourselves out there, since we don't have shows as often as some other groups. So it's a nice way to kind of do something once a month that's a little low pressure and doesn't require like a lot of like rehearsal, because we can just meet up a couple times and do some improv practice, but we don't have to like do a full fledged like dress rehearsal like we do for the late night shows, but get some new people that we haven't worked with before involved. So
nice.
Yeah,
let's talk about No Outlet Improv.
Let's talk about it. Kind of going along with the origin stories of late night, I was kind of looking for something to do. I was, you know, had just finished a big production of Rocky Horror at Dog Story. My friend Chuck and the group that I've helped out with, the University Wits, did. And I was just looking for something to do. And my friend Matt Fowler, who played Brad in that, and he and I have been on an improv team at Pseudo at Grand Valley. He was like, hey, this group No Outlet's looking to do open auditions for new members. I think I'm gonna go check it out. And I was like, sure, I'll go too. I went and auditioned, and that's where I met everyone who was then currently a member, Aaron and Katie and Ryan and Nick and Lizzie, and I think that was at the time that was everybody. But I also met TJ and Mike at that audition. They auditioned with me and Colleen and Petra. And those are the four people that they wound up choosing. I didn't make the cut. I didn't take it as seriously as I probably should have, because I was mostly there just supporting my friend Matt. But it was a lot of fun, and I was like, oh man, that kind of would have been cool to be a part of. But I wasn't like, whatever. I wasn't like super upset. But then I heard that the comedy outlet thing was going to start at Dog Story, and I was super excited. And so I just kept going and kept showing up, and I was kind of out of practice from doing improv for a while, and that kind of helped sharpen up those skills again. Eventually I was invited to audition again and join the group. So I joined along with Amy Gaskin. And by that point, Kristen was also a member at that point. Liz Hatfield joined too. And so eventually people have come and gone from that. But so that's been a lot of fun to be a part of, because all those guys are super, super talented. And it definitely helps me like raise my game. I don't always feel like improv is my strongest suit when it comes to performing, but I enjoy it a lot. And so that's been a great, and now that we're doing more musical improv shows, that's been a lot of fun to try and incorporate that part of my sensibilities, is because I'm just a big music nerd. And so doing that has been a lot of fun.
That segues nicely. Do you have a copy of my notes over there?
I don't. No, I'm just doing it like off the handle.
Oh, it's flowing well. Let's talk about playing the accordion and other musical instruments.
Yeah. Like I said, big music nerd, band geek. I played piano from a young age. I took piano lessons, and I eventually chose to play drums or percussion when I joined high school or middle school band, just because I didn't want to like have to learn a different instrument. I was just like, I already know how to play piano, so just give me some sticks and I'll play the xylophone, essentially was my thinking. From that, learned to play drums as well, drum set. And around the same time, it's really no secret that two of my favorite musicians are They Might Be Giants and Weird Al Yankovic. I mean, if you know me at all, that's not at all a surprise. So both of those musicians heavily feature the accordion, and I wanted to learn how to play it because I was a big fan of both of those. So I got a accordion from my grandmother and found a gentleman in St. John, Michigan, who was teaching lessons, and my mom would drive me every Saturday to take lessons with this guy, and eventually bought a bigger, nicer accordion from him because he repaired them as well. So got a good deal on that because I was taking lessons from him. And I just thought that was a cool thing to do. I was like already, you know, a nerd at that point and wasn't gonna fool anybody, so I was like, I'm just gonna do this because I want to. And wound up working out because I've been in a few bands since then, and being able to like whip that out as a special skill, both for that and in theater too. I've used that for comedic purposes, and if you know, been like, oh, I can play accordion. Oh, well, we're definitely putting that in the play.
Yeah, I've enjoyed seeing your accordion performances at Dog Story. Yeah. It's always enjoyable.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a fun instrument that's an easily recognizable, like, sight gag just to see it. Like, people automatically have a reaction to it. But if... And I'm not, like, a great player. Like, they're definitely, like, I definitely don't play it nearly as well as other people could and have. But if you can even remotely play something even halfway good on it, like it's impressive to a lot to a lot of people. So, so yeah. Once I figured out like a good quick jump by Van Halen is an easy go to. For me, because it's like instantly recognizable, just a fun thing.
And you said you have been in a couple of bands, or you are in bands, or
not currently. Well, I guess technically I'm a member of a couple bands, but I haven't like been practicing with or playing with them in a while, just because I've been so busy with Comedy Outlet Mondays and everything. So. But yeah, I've played drums in a few bands, and I've played piano in some as well. Mostly drums, though. And then if we ever do like acoustic sets, then I'm like, well, I can bring my accordion, or if they have a piano, I can play that. But yeah, no. Always been a musical guy, so I like being able to use that. Sometimes it's nice to like not be the spotlight, just to kind of be in the background and supporting somebody else, but still like being a part of it is fun. So yeah,
thank you. There's no good segue for this one. You have very soft elbows. How do you maintain those?
I was wondering when that was going to come into play. I moisturize daily.
Do you have a preferred moisturizing product?
Nope, whatever's around. If I don't have anything, I'll go to the fridge and just dip it in some mayo or whatever happens to be in there.
Oh.
My roommates don't listen to this podcast, so it's okay for me to say that.
Interesting.
No, I don't know why that got involved.
You know why. Next question. Tattoos?
None. I have zero tattoos. Nothing against them. I just have never found one that I felt was good enough to put on my body for...
Ever.
Yeah, it's just not a thing that I've really had that much interest in doing. I appreciate a lot of my friends do have several tattoos, and the stories behind them are always interesting and they look cool. And I don't know, I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to like needles and stuff like that. It just seems like something that I wouldn't enjoy the process of it enough, and the result, I don't have anything like tugging at my heartstrings to make me go through that, to make it worthwhile. So, yeah, I've always joked, though, if I was going to get one, I would do a lower back tattoo.
Oh.
And it would be the word tramp. But in block letters with like a little like bleed over of color, so as to suggest that a giant rubber stamp was just whacked on my
a tramp stamp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, someone else can get that now and steal my idea, and it can be brought into fruition and reality. But I don't have to suffer the pain, and I can still enjoy the joke. So have at it, guys.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. Tramp Stamp 2017.
What are some of your favorite comedic movies?
We've talked about a few of them, so yeah. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, definitely. Muppet Movie was a big growing up. I consider that. There's just like, looking back, like there's so many, like Mel Brooks is in that, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor's in it briefly. He's like the ice, he's selling balloons to Gonzo at a fair. Dom DeLuise, there's just like a ton of comedic people in that. So like that was a like an early like kind of setting the table for me and pursuing like just nerding out over comedy. Other favorites, I mean, most anything like that a Saturday Night Live cast member has been involved in, like the Blues Brothers or
Night at the Roxbury.
Night at the Roxbury. You know, I the later stuff I'm not as familiar with. I know I've seen the Night at the Roxbury movie at one point, but that wasn't like a big one for me. Wayne's World is great.
Undercover Brother.
Undercover Brother's all right. Superstar's pretty good.
Does Mean Girls count?
I guess I'm thinking more, huh?
Does Mean Girls count?
Mean Girls definitely counts. I think Mean Girls is a phenomenal movie, and I love that in general. I'm thinking, I guess, more like the like Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd era, or like Spinal Tap, or the, any of the Christopher Guest movies, Best in Show and Mighty Wind. I love The Jerk is great. I really like Kevin Smith and his movies, so like Mallrats and Dogma. Dogma's probably one of my favorite movies. I like a lot of weird movies, so a lot of like my movie tastes when it comes to comedy films, it's either like super weird and dark, like dark humor, like I would consider Being John Malkovich to be a comedy.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a weird one. It's not as weird as some of his other work. but like, or even like, I mean, Welcome to the Dollhouse is a really dark one, or Happiness. Todd Solondz, that's a, like a really, really dark sense of humor, but I would still call them comedies. If you haven't seen those movies, don't watch them in polite company. Not a good, not a great date movie, either of those.
Hmm.
Terry Gilliam, I mean, his movies aren't, I would say, like laugh out loud comedies, but like Fisher King is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, and that's Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams at like I think their peak. Brazil is a lot of really funny dark satire, but it's not necessarily like a laugh a minute type movie.
Did you see his newest one, The Zero Theorem?
Zero Theorem, I did see that. I have
Christopher
that. Christoph Waltz. Yeah, Waltz. Christoph Waltz. That one's great. Yeah, I mean, so like a lot of those, I wouldn't classify strictly as comedy, but like there's like definitely sci-fi, some like sci-fi satire. Oh man, I mean, talking Peter Sellers, Doctor Strangelove, or the Pink Panther movies, or Being There is kind of a like a later kind of. Not really, again, half kind of like a dramedy. I like a lot of movies that are like not one thing. There's usually like some sort of like darkness or sadness to them, like Harold and Maude, or
is that the Little Miss Sunshine? Harold and Kumar?
Yeah, yeah. It's Harold and Maude Go to White Castle. Yep. It's a boy that likes committing suicide, but he takes his old elderly friend to go get some sliders late at night. So
classic.
Yep, classic. But I also love like all the Judd Apatow movies too. So like 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, all the Seth Rogen. We were talking about Sausage Party earlier. This is the end. Super Bad. The Interview. Probably my favorite comedic. The funniest movie I've ever seen, but is definitely not supposed to be a comedy, is The Room. It's like the best. That's the funniest movie I've ever seen.
The Room?
The Room. Oh my gosh. Have you never seen? Oh my gosh.
I don't think so. Who's in it?
Nobody you have ever heard of. Oh. That's the beauty of it. Oh my gosh. Chris, this is my official announcement. At some point in the near future, I'm going to talk to Becca. We're going to rent out the fuse box. We're going to have a screening of The Room. It's right. going to be a thing, because you're not the only person that I've talked to in the Grand Rapids comedy scene who hasn't seen this movie. And there are enough people that have seen it, but oh my God, it's a beautiful film. I could spend a whole hour talking about this as well, but nutshell, it is a very intended as a very serious, passionate tragedy drama, and it was written, directed, produced, edited, and starred. Maybe not edited. I'm adding that one in. He definitely produced and directed and wrote and stars in by a man named Tommy Wiseau, and he is a person of unknown ethnicity or origin and age who raised $6 million of his own money and bought a bunch of film equipment and hired a bunch of actual legitimate film people to realize this vision that he had. And it is the tale of a man whose future wife, not his fiance, always referred to as future wife, is having an affair with his best friend, and the drama and tension of, will he find out about this affair, and what will it do to him when he does? But it is executed so poorly from every element, from the writing to the editing choices to even like the shots. It's like every other scene there is another like long establishing shot of San Francisco. Like, it's just unnecessary exterior shots peppered in throughout for no reason. And the acting is terrible. He just completely bungled this movie in every single possible way. And it just should have never been released, and it should have never seen the light of day. But it's implied of where he got his money from is like through some sort of either mafia involvement or like black market trading of like leather jackets or something like that. There's a whole book about it called The Disaster Artist, and it is being adapted and is going to be released this year in December, actually, of the making of this horrible, horrible film by his friend and co-star and at one point roommate. His name's Greg Sestero, and he's like this young, he tried to make a go of it as an actor, and he met this weird, weird guy who speaks with a thick European accent, who has long, straggly hair and looks like a leather Muppet vampire and talks like a weird cross between Christopher Walken and Borat. And it's just the most ridiculous movie you've ever seen in your life. And it was picked up at one point by a bunch of people as a found film of like unintentional comedy, like Tim and Eric and Patton Oswalt and other comedians found this movie and championed it as the greatest unintentional comedy of all time. And now he's kind of taken it and attempted to rewrite history to make it seem like he always intended it to be as such, but it definitely, but James Franco is directing the adaptation of the making of that movie.
Oh.
And he plays Tommy Wiseau, and his brother Dave plays Greg Sestero, the other actor, and Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, I think, co-wrote the script and are producing it as well. And there's a ton of people that are in it. Comedians Alison Brie and Bryan Cranston. And it's, I can't wait to see that movie because, but at the same time, all the things that are in it, it's the only thing that's, the only reason why that's funny is because it actually happened. Like, the book is ridiculous. Like, you read it and they spent an entire day, like an entire 12-hour shoot day, trying to get him to perfect one line. Like, he could, like, because he can't speak properly. Like, his accent is so thick. Like, they had to do over, like, hundreds of takes of him, like, of a 5-second clip of him. Yeah, it's it's ridiculous. So anyway, I don't want to say any more because to give it away, anything else would ruin it. But everyone who, yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
It vaguely reminds me. Have you seen Exit Through the Gift Shop?
Yeah. Oh,
kind
sure.
Kind of like.
Oh man, Mr. Brainwash is like 2 steps removed from Tommy Wiseau. They almost could be the same person.
What are some of your favorite comedic television shows?
Oh man, I could just laundry list that too. I've been a huge Saturday Night Live fan from a very young age, and so that I've just consistently kept up with. Yeah, as much as people will attempt to like downplay it or say like it's not as good as it used to be, or I think it's always this. Like, there are definitely waves and peaks and valleys, but I think it's been pretty consistently great, and also at the same time, just as not great from the very beginning. Like, I think people have rose-colored glasses about their favorite cast and eras. I think they're, if you were to go back and watch an entire episode of, whether it's, you know, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, or the Eddie Murphy years, or like the Mike Myers, Dana Carvey years, or the Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer and Tina Fey, or any of those eras, if you were to take just standalone one episode and watch the entire thing, there would be gold and there would be some terrible, not great sketches that just fall flat. And that's what happens every week. And that's the beauty of it, because it's a live show. And that's kind of why with Late Night, we've kind of modeled after that, because it's like, not everything is going to stick, but let's try it and see what happens, and then we can come back to it. But with Saturday Night Live, it's out there forever and it's immortalized. And, you know, when they re-air things or when they put it on up on Netflix, they can cut out the stuff that doesn't work as well, but it's still there. Anyway, that was I love that show. I love everyone that's involved in it currently. I think is just some of the funniest performers. Kate McKinnon is great. Other shows I've always loved. Classic weird sitcoms, which that's my sitcom kind of homages to. So like Family Matters, Full House, Home Improvement, the Drew Carey Show. I was a big fan of that. Yeah. Whose Line obviously was very influential. I love The Office. I love both versions. I think Ricky Gervais is, unfortunately, I'm not as big of a fan of everything he's done since then. Extras is great. I think Extras is really great. Not on board with with Derek.
Oh
yeah, I don't know. I've heard mixed things about it. I watched it and was not, I don't know, I just, him as a person just kind of has started to grate on me. But yeah, I love
have a lot
the,
of notes.
The Office is still great. The Steve Carell version is completely different, but also great for different reasons. Scrubs, always been a big fan of that. I really love that. Anything that has like some era of whimsy to it. Talked about Animaniacs was a big cartoon fan. The Simpsons is probably one of my favorite shows of all time, next to Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is definitely not a comedy, but it has some comedic elements peppered throughout, but it's definitely not. But yeah, I could quote The Simpsons like for hours. Seinfeld, I grew up watching those two shows on reruns. Yeah, anything that was ever like Parks and Rec, 30 Rock, Community, those shows were like huge. Big fan of Archer, big fan of Always Sunny. I love right now, Last Man on Earth is a great show, I think. Very underrated. Bob's Burgers is great. Rick and Morty, I just started watching, actually. I was a holdout for a long time, not for any reason other than I just was like, that's just another thing that everyone already loves that I've kind of missed the boat on, so I'm gonna have to wait until some time has passed. And I'm on board now, so
yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah,
that's probably my favorite show on TV right now.
Yeah, I just basically went through my whole like Netflix and Hulu queue, but there's a ton of other shows. I don't know. I like a lot of weird random shows that like I'll latch on. I'll get on board on the ground level, and then they wind up getting canceled, and I'm like, man, yep. That was great though. Like I loved Arrested Development. I love Malcolm in the Middle.
They're doing another season.
They are doing 80. Another season. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah,
Malcolm in the Middle was so good.
Malcolm was
so much of it to go back and watch too.
I know that one was definitely I included that, but that one definitely didn't like that one definitely had a good run for sure. It didn't get canceled before its time. It kind of had the perfect kind of run to it. But Greg the Bunny is a random show that not a lot of people have seen or remember, but it was on very briefly, and that's a perfect, like, as you can guess, like, there's puppets involved. You've got Seth Green and Eugene Levy and Sarah Silverman involved. You have some really great guest stars. And the warden from Shawshank Redemption is in that, Bob Gunton. He plays, like a children's show actor who's like a train conductor, but like in his off-screen persona, the actor that he plays is like a Vietnam vet and is like super intense. Yeah, I don't know. That show was definitely like that could have been gone on for several seasons, and I would have been super happy. But that it got canceled.
The Fox
like it, yeah, it was one of those
going through that.
They went through a run of shows that had a lot of potential and then got canceled too soon.
I think when Family Guy came back and they listed like 100 shows that had been picked up and then dropped at the same time.
And the fact that none of them got renewed, but Family Guy did has always been a sore. I'm not a big, I don't know. I don't like Seth MacFarlane all that much
as a
comedic voice or as a person.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, I'm shots fired. I'm just going to say it flat out.
Did you see A Million Ways to Die in the West?
I did not.
It was really funny.
As a
spoof on the genre.
I could see where it would be. I don't know. I find him and Ricky Gervais currently, I don't know, both of them just as people just rub me the wrong way.
He brought back Cosmos with Neil
deGrasse. Yeah, sure. I'm sure he's a nice enough guy. I don't know. I got subjected to a few too many Stewie impressions in my youth, and I just have probably had a axe to grind against him ever since. I don't know. American Dad is pretty funny. I've seen enough of that to be like, okay, I'll give him that. But I don't know. I felt like, I don't know. I just would watch episodes of Family Guy every once in a while, and I'd just be like, I don't get it. I don't get why people think this is so great. I don't know. South Park.
so much better.
I love South Park, and I think they nailed just the with the manatee jokes as a concept. Why I don't particularly care for it. It's like I love whimsy and absurdity and surrealism, and I love things that are random. But if there's too much of it and not enough something to ground it, it just loses me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you could probably poke holes in my assessment and find something else that I love is like that's equally ridiculous and absurd that I just love. But I don't know.
Did you watch Horace and Pete?
I have not seen Horace and Pete. I'm the worst person. I love Louis. I love Louis C.K. in general. And Horace and Pete was something that, as a concept, I loved when I heard about it, and I just haven't gotten around to sitting through it yet. Because partly, I hear it's pretty heavy, right?
Yeah,
it gets
at times
gets pretty dark, and that's not something I'm opposed to. It's just generally, I don't have a lot of time recently. Like in the last couple of years, I've just been I keep a pretty busy schedule. So if I am home, like if it's not something that either the people that I'm hanging out with want to watch, or if it's something that I'm going to like not feel great about myself after having watched, I generally put it off until I feel like I'm ready, quote unquote, but I should just suck it up because I love Master of None, and I hear, you know, it's not much darker or heavier than that.
This season of Master of None was kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah. I haven't seen the new one yet, but I love the first season, so I've been meaning to go through it.
Yeah. I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah.
It's just the style was kind of inconsistent.
That's what I've heard a few people say. I'll still watch it, but I can't wait to see it and decide for myself. But yeah, Horace and Pete is something that I should really.
Yeah, with your love of sitcoms, and it's just a very good example of the
definitely
genre, and so many great people in there. What streaming shows are you currently watching?
I mean, I guess those are a lot of it. I haven't really picked up any other streaming shows, since that's become kind of a thing. It's mostly just been me trying to like finish up things that I haven't already seen. I do really like, so Master None is one. I guess I would consider, The Lady Dynamite, Maria Bamford's show. That's a Netflix, I think, exclusive. So other shows that I only discovered through streaming would be like A Man Seeking Woman, that I've discovered recently, and that's a really funny show.
So Jay
Baruchel, yeah. And Eric Andre is on that.
Very surreal.
Yeah, a friend of mine introduced me to that, and I was like, no, this is pretty great.
It's crazy how like 90% of the show is like normal, and then 10% is just like, what?
Yeah, right. Just happen? Yeah. BoJack Horseman is another one that that's
so good.
Yeah. For me, I don't know. It's hard for me to distinguish between shows that are like, because I don't binge watch shows like other people do. I even if it's like it all drops at once, I have to like take some time in between. So the only show that I've ever like actually sat through and finished in one sitting was Fargo season one, and I would say that that's like probably a great example of something that's like comedic but also super super dark. Have you seen that, the Fargo series on FX?
I haven't. I've heard really good things.
It's so good. I bought season one, sat on it for a while. I bought it on Blu-ray, and then didn't watch it for about a year until season two came out, and then I was like, I should actually watch this now. And I watched it and finished it in one night with my roommate. He'd walked in like halfway through the second episode and he's like, this is really good. I was like, yeah, you want to watch it? And then we both kind of were just like, we didn't stop until it was finished. So yeah, it was so well done. It's the perfect melding of the humor and the just really like intense violence and darkness from the movie, but it's not like a, like there are elements of characters that are definitely like an homage to the characters from the movie, but it's some brilliant acting. Like Billy Bob Thornton in season one is like phenomenal. Like, yeah. And so, yeah, that show's great. That was a lot of TV nerd talk.
Yeah. Have you ever tried performing stand-up?
You know, I did do a few open mics. My really good friend Ryan McKernan started some open mics at Grand Valley. And I performed at a few of those. And I bombed. I did really well once. I didn't like do super well, but I did well. And then I bombed a couple times after that. And I was like, oh, I guess it's not for me. And then I never, went back, but I really love stand up, comedy in general. And I, a bunch of friends, obviously mutual friends that we have in the scene are very, very talented. So I've always kind of felt like, well, I don't need to go up there and taint it with my, you know, half-assed attempt at it. But I don't know. It's been something that's been in the back of my head of like, yeah, maybe I'll try that again.
I'd like to see that.
I would. I don't know. Part of me, I just decided that I prefer like doing sketch or improv because I don't know. Maybe this is telling, but I like having like a character as like a layer that I can like I don't wanna, I don't know, I'm too much of a people pleasing person to like say things. Well, and I guess in theory you don't have to be like, I if I was gonna do stand up, I wouldn't be the person that gets up there and like tells like really dark like confessional type jokes, because that's just not my personality. But yeah, if I was going to do it, I always feel like it would be like some sort of layer of a character or something like what kind of, I guess, more along the lines of what Maria Bamford does, or Zach Galifianakis, or like they're themselves, but there's also definitely like a persona. Paul F. Tompkins is also kind of a similar, like Paul F. Tompkins, the comedian, is probably very similar to Paul F. Tompkins in everyday life, but there's definitely like a, I am performing right now kind of a mode. And I guess maybe that's what I would probably need to figure out my distinguishing. But yeah, no, I'm a big fan of a lot of different stand-ups, and I guess part of it's just like, yeah, there's just so many that are so talented that if I'm gonna do it, I'm not gonna half-ass it, I'm gonna whole-ass it. And I just haven't had an opportunity yet to do that, but maybe you might see it at some point in the near future.
I would love to see you whole-assing it.
Thanks, Chris.
What is the best gift that you have ever received?
The best gift I have ever received. I mean, I've heard a few answers to this question, and so I could go with the literal route or the figurative route. I think one of the best gifts that I've ever received was, I got to join Joe Anderson on a tour once, and I was essentially understudying as one of the Don't We Boys, and it wasn't like a long term thing. It was not presented as like, all right, you're a new Don't We Boy, but it was a temporary thing, and being able to get that taste of what that life is like kind of like was a great gift to be able to. And then when that tour was over, and then going back to not doing that, and then like, oh man, well now that's really all I want to do. So there's a lot of stuff that I learned doing that. And so that was a great gift that, Joe gave me. And so he's been, a big, inspiration for a lot of what I do. So props to Joe. Props to Joe Anderson.
Thank you. What is the best gift that you have ever given?
The best gift I have ever given. Man. I can't think of. I can't think of a lot of examples that are like interesting stories to tell, because a lot of them are just like, you know. Man, this is probably the worst. Dead air. You know, it's a funny story. And I'm not gonna. There's probably a better story or better example, but I can't think of any right now. So the first thing that popped into my head was, at one point I was dating this girl, and she was sick, and, or she wasn't feeling well. I can't exactly remember the full context. She was unhappy. She loved pickles. That was a big thing. It was kind of a joke. It was a real thing, but it was kind of a joke between us. It was like just how much she liked pickles. And I, to cheer her up, went to the Subway on campus. And my thought was, I'll get a bunch of pickles and bring it to her at a rehearsal, and cheer her up. Make you know. And they didn't have whole pickles. They just had the slices. So I was like, well, I mean, how much for a bowl of pickles? And they were like, I guess we'll just charge you as a salad. Like, they were very confused. It was a very weird ordeal. I don't think that people that worked at this campus Subway had any idea of how to, what to make of this request.
Training video.
Yeah, exactly. So they just literally just filled a giant salad bowl with pickle slices, and I brought it to my girlfriend and presented it to her, and she laughed because of how ridiculous it was. And it fulfilled its purpose, so I felt good about the gift. Yeah, that's a pretty mundane and silly one, and there's probably a lot of better ones that I could think of, but that's the first thing that pops in my head.
Thank you for sharing. Let's talk about your role as a documentarian of the Grand Rapids comedy scene.
Oh, boy. I guess I wouldn't even know how to begin unpacking that, like, conceptually. Basically, I just, I bought a camera from my roommate, who's, like, he and I and my other roommate, all three of us work in the we worked at a store that I will not disclose the name of, but we sell cameras, and they're big photography buffs. And I was a video major at Grand Valley, but I never like got into the technical side of it as much, other than from a sound standpoint. Audio recording was more of my focus in school. When I started working in this place and I had to learn about cameras, I bought a camera off of my roommate and decided, well, I gotta practice using it. So that was around the just after Comm had started. So I just started bringing it to Comm and testing it out, and I just kept doing it and kept bringing it. And now I have like a I don't know, I just started recording every Comm and every No Outlet show and every late night Grand Rapids show. And I started coming to Fictional Friends and recording their shows and Funny Girls and Griff. And it just became a thing where it's just like, well, I have all this footage. What do I do with it all? So I'm still trying to figure out, like, at some point gonna have to start like sifting through all those hours. If I had more time, I probably would go through and start trying to like curate, like, and making like releasing like classic clips from the shows on YouTube or something. But I mean, that's like a whole ordeal in and of itself. So I'd love to do that at some point, but I gotta work and sleep too. So, I just started doing it because I just wanted to practice using my camera and getting better at it. And I've gotten pretty good at it. I've definitely put in enough. What's the number of hours that it takes to be good at something? 10,000?
84.
84 hours?
I think so.
84 hours? Well, then I've definitely gotten pretty... I'm halfway there, at least.
To be good at something?
To be good at something?
84.
84 hours. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Great. It's like...
800.
800,000.
800,000 to be great?
That sounds right.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, baby steps.
It's a big step going from good to great.
Going from 84 to 800,000? There's probably a couple like stopping points along the way that I'll probably have to hit, but you know, pretty good, almost great, you know, something like that.
You don't even want to know about exceptional.
It's, yeah, like, oh man. That's lifetimes. I'll probably die before I become even close to great at anything more than just that. So
some of it carries over into the next
thing. Oh, there's like rollover minutes for being great at things. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
How do you see the Grand Rapids improv/comedy scene changing?
That's a really good question. I think right now I joined Late Night Grand Rapids because it was an opportunity that was presented to me by meeting Al and just happening to know like him and Audrey and the other people that eventually joined. And I consider that myself very fortunate and lucky. That's another gift that I think I was given. And then another gift was just the fact of Comm existing and coming into being when it did. And so it was like there was nothing happening that was like that. That there wasn't really many opportunities. And then suddenly there was. So now... like we saw this huge floodgate open of people who were looking, other people like me and other people, like the people from No Outlet, and who were looking for this, something like this to exist. So when, you know, Joe offered the members of No Outlet to have it to take over from what had previously existed at Dog Story and become this new thing, it was like just a big like smorgasbord of, you know, the people from Rapid Delivery who had been doing it for a while, but now they had a place to try out other things outside of the context of that. And people who were not affiliated with anyone and just were fans and just came up and created, you know, groups like Planned Parenthood or Funny Girls came into being because of No Outlet putting on the GRIF, Grand Rapids Improv Festival, and seeing that there was a lack of all-female comedic groups. And so Com and GRIF, I kind of are kind of conflating the two. But I think there was just people seeing a need and a vacuum and a void of things. Because you could do it on a certain level if you were already at that level of, like, you know, River City or Pop Scholars or even Rapid Delivery was, like, I don't know how, maybe I'm going to embarrass myself by not being completely knowledgeable about that history, but I feel like that was not around for that long before Com came about, but it was it wasn't in existence prior to that, and that was again a more of a formal, like, there's a class structure, and that's great, and I think that's important to have, and maybe to have more of that where there's more structure and more opportunities to do that. Maybe that's where it goes from there. Cause now we're at a place where there's a ton of people. We know, all right, if you want to go see improv at these different places, Fictional Friends is an option. Comedy Outlet Mondays is an option. All the different groups that perform there and are, you know, involved, you know where there are places to go. And now just like maybe figuring out how to get to that next level of, making it more accessible to people who don't already know about it, and people who are more, maybe people who are more knowledgeable or talented than we even know that haven't found it yet. Making it more of a destination, because right now it's like a great place. Like if you already live in Grand Rapids, this is a cool place to, you know, to jump into it. But if we wanted to turn it into a place where it's like other people are coming, people go to Chicago because they know, all right, that's where I can study improv with Second City or IO or, Comedy Sports, or if I go to LA, I can do it with, you know, Groundlings or UCB or New York as well. There's just those are like destination places for improv, and Grand Rapids could become that if there was more structure and more opportunities. And, you know, there's a lot of hope, and I'm definitely a big supporter of what will of the comedy project hopefully becoming that. So that would be a great thing. And maybe more, maybe other things that we can't even foresee at this point. But I mean, there's a ton of pipe dreams that you could have. But for me, as it is right now, as where I'm at in my position, I mean, there's just sky's the limit, really. I mean, we could, man, there's just a ton of cool stuff that could happen if enough people get involved and enough people start to see the value of what's happening, and people are able to devote more of their time and energy to it in a way that they can, you know, not have to worry about, I also have this day job that I gotta be at. If there was a way to monetize it in a way for certain people, to take it to that next level, that'd be awesome. Even if it doesn't get to that point, I will still, as a fan, be super supportive. And as someone who, I don't know, I see myself as not a person that's like in a, I understand that I am in a position of privilege and a position of power is a weird way of saying it. I feel really uncomfortable saying that, but as someone who has really lucked, I've been very fortunate and very lucky to be in several right places at the right time to be offered to, you know, co-host com with Aaron, and someone who, like, you know, when Mike moved away, he told me that that was, you know, something he'd hoped would happen. And so to have that passing of the torch and being put in that position has been, super, flattering and super, scary at the same time. 'Cause now it's like, all right, well, now I have to rise to that occasion, and hopefully, hopefully I'm doing okay at that, but time will tell.
I think you are.
Oh, thanks, Chris.
Yeah. With digital distribution, like
that's the next step. I think
pretty much reach a global audience with whatever you decide to produce, whether it's some sort of video production mm-hmm. or audio production mm-hmm. or
definitely
like a short film or a feature film or whatever.
Yeah,
you want.
Definitely.
Like the technology, the tools to make that happen are available and reasonably priced.
Yeah, for sure. I think if that would be probably the next step is like taking what we've already have and going from there. Like we're already like you said, and like, you know, we've got the tools, we've got the material, we could probably make it happen. And so that's definitely something that's in the back of my head of like, yeah, we can reach a ton of people with what we've got and kind of show the rest of the world and what's happening here is valid and cool and super super fun. So thanks yeah. thanks for condensing what I was saying into.
I moved the affirmation segment up into this part. So, Sean, I really admire how much you share. How much? Sorry. Let me scratch that. Take it out in post. Start over. Sean, I really admire how you share so much time with so many amazing projects. You're an inspiration for anyone that gets involved in the local comedy scene. I am a fan. Thank you for being part of the community.
Thank you, Chris.
And the very last question of the first part of the show, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Oh, man. I just recently did this as an exercise with some friends. So my honest answer is that I would, my 16-year-old self, by that point, I'd kind of already steered the ship, as it were. I'd kind of already gone through the worst, in my mind, the worst part of, but I guess if I were to, phrase it in that way, not to not worry so much, but worry about the right things. I spent a lot of time being more concerned about what other people thought and less time focusing on the things that I wanted. But at the same time, I definitely also could have spent more time focusing on Okay, this has become if I were to tell my 16-year-old self advice, it would be to be more continue to be as generous as you are, but also extend that generosity to yourself. 'Cause I think there are times where I've felt like it might be selfish to pursue something like comedy or performing instead of something that maybe is a more noble profession. But I think there's validity to that, and being part of this community has shown me that actually you can do just as much good by pursuing what on the surface seems like just being silly and I had a brain fart. Being silly and I'm blanking on this. Anyway, don't worry about it. Keep it short. I think that was a complete answer somewhere in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
16-year-old Sean would understand.
Yeah, right.
And then finally, I have a quick intern update. I did hire a new intern, George, who's here this evening for his first day of training, just as an observer. He's a college student at GRCZVSU studying acoustic science. We'll have a short interview with him after the break. And I haven't had time yet to set up a musical transition.
So oh, no.
If you wouldn't mind doing some sort of something to take us into the break and then ring the bell once you're done.
All right.
Please.
This is the grand cast. You're gonna hear a bell in just a minute. When you're driving to work, it's a bell, not a siren of the cops behind you. Just a bell.